Good afternoon, baseball fans. It is Monday, April 8th. I know normally we record on a Sunday, but I was trying to be a good mom and was doing the things on the Sunday. And then all of the things that I needed to do that I put off got piled up. And so Kelsey was gracious enough to record with me on a Monday instead. I know all of you are just so mad at me that you just did not get your fill when you normally do. I know. I'm very sorry. I apologize.
Banging down the internet walls. We're
I
here.
I've been told that people are on pins and needles waiting for the next episode to drop. I'm just kidding. Nobody
As
has
they
told me
should
that.
be.
They should be, though. They should be. You guys all should be oh so grateful that we put our time and energy into bringing you the news and the notes and the fun things about baseball, because this is Susie. That is Kelsey. This is Bourbon and Baseball, All the Balls edition. You guys know, if you're already listening to this, you guys already know. But I'm going to give you the rated R warning from the jump, because that is what we do here at Bourbon and Baseball. We are rated R podcast. No, not for the nudity, just for all of the adult language, adult humor, inappropriate adult humor at that. And so if you have any littles listening that you don't want to hear the four-letter words or the inappropriate adult humor, then head on out right now. Side note, if you are here for Astros stuff and you want PG-13, Susie, there is an option for that. That's over on the Top Fan Rivalry Network. And I do a podcast called Astros in Orbit with my co-host Bill. He's not as fun as Tom. Shh, we won't tell him. Okay.
Shout
But
out, Tom.
shout out Tom. But that is a shorter, much more compact PG-13 version of Astros news. So if that is something that you are interested in, that you could have your kids listen to, by all means, join us over there at Top Fan Rivalry. It is in a network of other podcasts. So if for some reason are interested in like Dodgers or Red Sox or any other teams, they have some other team podcasts in there as well. Use my name, Susie Q, SUZYQ. You get 10% off the yearly thing, which is I think $58. It's a really weird number. I don't know why it's 58, but apparently he's a math guy. 58 made sense to him. I don't know. You just trust me when I say Bill's super awesome. But just a little, he's a Dodger fan. It's
Yeah.
we'll forgive him for
Point
a
is
little.
that there's a version of Susie for everyone out there.
Exactly. This is the more fun version, though. Just FYI, this is the more fun one because
Unfiltered.
the unfiltered. And over here, we get to talk about all of the balls on this edition of Bourbon and Baseball. You know how it is. And these episodes always run just a little bit longer, just because we try and cram in all of the news and notes over the week. And that's a lot of stuff, guys. That's a lot of balls in your ears. That's not eyes. That doesn't make it any better. Doesn't make it any better. I was trying to say hearing and seeing the things. Anyhow, if you want us to record more often, then maybe you should sponsor us or give us money so that we don't have to do all of the other things, so that you can get all of the content all the time. I'm just
I'd
saying.
be here more for money.
Exactly. We all would be. So, anyways, Kels, I want to ask you if you know about the fun fact, and then I'll
Yeah.
tell you about it.
Tell me.
I do you know how fans got to keep the foul balls?
No, I do not know anything about the history of even like how the foul poles have evolved or,
Ooh.
yeah, no, fill me in.
That the foul poles may be another thing that I look into, but the foul balls were apparently way back in the olden days. Side note, I said way back in the olden days to my children, and they go in the 1990s, and then I died. I was
Kids.
like, love that for me. Anyhow, when I say way back in the olden days, I literally mean at the beginning of baseball, like
I'll even,
1900s,
yeah, right. Yeah.
right? Apparently, all of the foul balls, all of the foul balls, I don't know why that was so hard to
Foul
say in
balls is hard to say.
that instance.
We
Ooh.
should have done our vocal warm-ups before
We
we
should have, and I don't even have alcohol to blame on this, people. It's like I said, it's the afternoon. I have to go pick up my kids at some point in time, so I can't even drink. I can't even blame
Foul
it on that.
balls, foul balls, foul
Foul
balls.
balls. Anyhow,
Woo.
so the foul balls were essentially property of the teams, and when the foul balls were hit into the stands, the people would have to throw back. And one of the little kids said, "I don't want to throw it back. I want to keep it."
Yeah.
You get fined if you don't throw it back. So the little kid said, "I don't want to throw it back." Ran out of the stadium with it, kept the foul ball, ran out of the stadium with it. They chased him down, and because he didn't pay the fine, had to spend the night in jail as like a 10-year-old. I think it was like a 10-year-old. It will not surprise you when I tell you what team this was that did this.
Recency bias wants it to be the Dodgers.
It is unfortunately not the Dodgers. It is the Philadelphia Phillies.
Oh, damn. It is
the Philadelphia Phillies. And so he had to spend the night in jail because he refused to give up this foul ball. And in the morning when the judge hears all of the cases, was just indignant that his police officers threw this 10-year-old kid in jail for this foul ball. And they're all, sorry, it's the law. And the team wanted us to, we had to do it because he wouldn't give the ball back. And the team was like, I want the ball back. And he wouldn't give it back. So them's the rules.
Yeah. Major League Baseball has always loved their rules.
Oh, absolutely. Only when it suits them though. And so then the judge said, abso-fucking-lutely not. I'm quoting this verbatim, by the way. No, I'm not. But he said, abso-fucking-lutely not. This is a dumb rule. Let this kid go. You get to keep this ball. And that spurred the wheels of change for the MLB to create this new rule that if a fan caught a foul ball, they were allowed to keep it so that they wouldn't be thrown in jail.
Wow, an unsung hero of our baseball fandom. I'm so glad you brought this to light. I'm thinking about a couple specific things as you're telling me this story. One is that David Sampson, who does his show Nothing Personal with David Sampson, former president of the Miami Marlins, he was on a podcast recently and he was talking about, with all of the Shohei Ohtani home run ball drama, which we're going to get to today, how they handled that, like his experience dealing with those milestone balls. And he got on a tangent about how all the balls, they cost $7 a piece, and how he used to be nickel and diming every fan for every ball, and they wanted them back and whenever they could get them and would use them in BP. And he, as a millionaire team president, this was front of mind for him. So I thought that was really interesting, and I love how candid he is about stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So it was just cool to hear about, but and entertaining to hear about. But then also, I was at Wrigley Field on this past Friday, April 5th, for Shohei Ohtani's first game ever at Wrigley Field. There are only three stadiums coming into that day that he has not yet played in the major leagues, and Wrigley Field was one of them. So super excited to be there for that game. But he hit a home run in that game, and the motherfucking Cubs fans, just like they always do, did they care that it was Shohei Ohtani's first home run at Wrigley Field?
Absolutely.
Or a Shohei Ohtani home run, period. Like, I don't even care. Threw it back on the field. And
oh my gosh.
It made my heart hurt as a baseball fan.
If I caught Shohei Ohtani's home run ball, we're going to get into the story. We'll get into the story in just a minute. There was a great segue there, though. Wow, words are hard. But first, you wanted to ask me a question, and I teed it up in my head. And so we got to go back because we got to do the things.
Yes, I'm sorry. I took us on a different trajectory there, but we will get to all of the Ohtani home run drama. Ohtani's just going to be in our All the Balls edition every week this season.
Pretty much.
Like, and probably rightly so. But I came across a question that Codify Baseball posed on Twitter that I thought was really interesting and a really fun one for us audio-driven people here, podcasters, to think about. And that is, so you're a pitcher and you can customize the PitchCom voice that you hear in your ear. Whose voice do you choose? Is there somebody that comes to mind right away that you're like, that's who I would want narrating my game to me?
Absolutely. And this is deep dive into my brain just now, because when you shared this with me earlier, I said immediately who I had in my head. And then I saw a story about something else, and then that name almost popped out of my mouth right now. And I'm all, that was not it. So it took me way longer to formulate the guy's last name that I actually wanted to say, which is Morgan Freeman. That's who I want in my ear. But I was going to say Morgan Wallen, and that is definitely not.
It's quite different. Yeah. That is a different experience. Different in-game experience.
And so apparently Morgan Wallen got arrested for DUI or throwing a chair. I don't
know. A chair from a balcony.
But I saw the story like right before we started recording. And apparently my brain was all, Morgan Wallen? That's the information. No, brain. That's not who we wanted. And I'm all, it's the black guy with a really deep, God. It's God. What is God's name?
God's name is Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman. So if you're on the YouTubes and if you are really good at reading facial features and expressions, go to the YouTube and you will see just the also slightest bit of panic in my eyes and my face being all, shit, I cannot say Morgan Wallen and I need to figure out who I'm missing. So it's Morgan Freeman for sure. Can you just imagine him saying, fastball down? Right. I can't do a really good impression of Morgan Freeman, obviously, but I would love that.
He's the one and only. Yeah,
definitely. Who would you want? Go.
So I had to think on this a bit because I couldn't really think of anyone in particular because I think it would depend on my mood day to day. Okay. Might change like what kind of vibes I needed come in my way. Oh, and okay. I am like so affected by audio. Uh-huh. It's my thing. But I have come to a solid decision.
Okay.
That I would pick P. Diddy, Sean Combs. Because I know you didn't see that one coming, but there's a reason. I don't know if you've ever listened to a sleep podcast of any kind. And I don't have any trouble sleeping normally, but years ago I worked at a gym and I worked every day at like 4 a.m. Uh-huh. So I had to go to sleep much earlier than I like naturally wanted to. And so I'd be like laying in bed wide awake at 9 o'clock. Like, how can I help myself wind down? And I found a P. Diddy sleep podcast and it worked for me. It helped. I haven't used it in years, but that period of time in my life, he was very impactful. And I think as a professional athlete, the thing that is so wild to me is like how they keep their composure and how they stay calm. And so P. Diddy, he brings me back. He keeps me calm. He reminds me that there's nowhere else I need to be, but right here, right now. And that's why I have to go.
That is hysterical. Yeah. You could have put a gun to my head and asked me who I would have thought. And that would be the absolute fucking last person on earth that I thought you would have chosen.
I'm going to send you the sleep podcast. Just if, because if one night you're lying awake a little longer than you want to, you just pop it on.
Oh my God, that's hysterical.
You have the best sleep of your life before you know it.
That's so funny. Speaking of the vibes and changing the voice in your pitch comm, I think maybe that would be a good idea. So I wouldn't get Sean P. Diddy Combs. I would get Morgan Freeman to give me like the relaxing vibes.
Yeah, he can do it all.
But I think if I was going to get hype, I would need Ludacris. Oh, I would need Luda to get me ready and run through a fucking wall. And have you heard all of the rappers do the Llama Red Pajamas?
No.
They read this kid's book and it's Llama Red Pajamas. And in their voice, essentially, of like how they rap.
Yeah.
And so go Google it. Llama Red Pajamas rappers. And there is Luda. There is Snoop. There is all of the new rappers that I don't have a fucking clue who they are. Busta. It is the best thing ever. And it makes me so happy. Sorry, guys, that just went on a tangent for baseball, but that's okay. I feel like that would be the best thing ever, though.
Yeah, it really just makes you think about how what you're listening to affects your mood. And maybe the listeners can tell us how listening to us affects their mood, because I don't know about you. We both listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to certain podcasts at different times of the day. David Sampson, for example, like I listen to him first thing in the morning because the timbre of his voice like makes me attentive and wakes me up. I could not listen to it any other time of the day. So it's an interesting thing to think about. And it's an important kind of tool that we all have that can change our environment, change our headspace at any time of the day.
Definitely, for sure. I could.
Sound voice in your ear.
I could see how David P. Sampson's podcast at the beginning of the day would wake you up. I don't have that.
No.
I just pulled up our notes, guys.
You saw what I added.
I just
pulled and up you just lost all train of thought. Good. My bad.
And I wasn't expecting to see nut grab update all in caps at the first thing because that was not there 2 minutes ago when
it was not. But I have to make sure that we're circling back, we're giving the people what they want, because this is a storyline that our listeners are following. And I am very serious about follow through.
We can't not go into this now, Kels. I love it that this is how we open up the show. Absolutely. And side note on this, my husband just saw the tweet that I had put up about the over under. And I didn't give any context in the actual tweet. And I put in our clip. But he didn't listen to the clip because obviously, why would you take the 45 seconds to listen to the clip when you could just ask me? what the clip is about. One of my children were in the room, and he looked at me, and I looked at him, and then I looked at her, and he goes, "Oh, I guess you'll tell me later." And I said, "Absolutely, I will tell you later." Because how do you explain grabbing your crotch to an 8-year-old? That's not what I wanted to do that day.
I was fortunate that there were not any children, and I was very aware of it around me at opening day. So what we're talking about, of course, is if you didn't listen to last week's episode, I went to opening day at Busch Stadium, which was just this past Thursday, April 4th, and Lance Lynn was the starter for the Cardinals. And here's the thing. I'm not trying to offend anybody. We already gave the disclaimers, but it is a thing that he does, right? If we're ignoring it, we're ignoring the elephant in the room. Like, you have to talk about it because it's such
a— That's not a pseudonym for Lance Lynn's dick, by the way, okay? We're not calling it the elephant in the room. That's not what we're doing.
No, sorry. That was pun not intended. But Lance Lynn actively grabs his crotch a lot while he is on the mound. And it is seen, obviously, if you're there in person, but also on television quite a bit, no matter who you're watching with. Yeah, we were anticipating how many nut grabs would happen in his opening day start at Busch Stadium, as I was going to be there in person and be able to keep eyes on it at all times. Now, I will say, I was a little busy having some fun and stuff, but I think I did.
How dare you? Job.
Oh. I think I did a pretty good job. You'll see in my episode that comes out tomorrow of my coverage of opening day at Busch Stadium, Peace, Love, and Baseball, that we talk quite a bit about it there as well. So I was very attentive. But we really overshot this, Susie.
We did.
Lost a lot of money because the nut grab total ended at 9. Now, he only pitched, let me check. I want to say he didn't even get into, I think it was 4 1/3 innings. So that was part of it. But I think the other big part of it was that it was cold.
Yeah, it was chilly.
Cold and it was windy. And maybe he doesn't need to adjust himself.
They like to, you know,
time then. I don't know.
They like to go up in yas when they're cold.
That's okay. So yeah, my guy friends who were with me, they were like, they're not as prevalent when it's cold. But also I think that he does it more when he's in a jam, when he's worked up. I noticed it as maybe being a little bit of like a nervous tick is a little extreme way to think it. I just can't think of a better term. But yeah, because he started to do it more as he got deeper into the start, when he started giving up 3 home runs as Lance Lynn does in less than 3 innings. Yeah, I think it's more of a thing that he does when it's hotter, for sure. That just makes sense biologically. And more when he is in a jam.
Okay.
Again, no pun intended. But yeah, 9. 9 was the official number for the opening day start.
So we overshot that. I said 53. You said 26. So we both overshot that. I think at some point in time, it's going to get there, though, especially in the summertime. So
we'll have to bet on this one again, like mid-July.
Yeah, we will revisit this for sure. And as one does when they put all of the runs on the pitchers, the D-backs had a couple of series that I know D-backs fans are just in shambles about. And as a pseudo D-backs fan, I'm with you there. I'm with you because apparently you can't score late. That's what she said. But they just put all of the runs in the beginning innings, and then they said, okay, we're good. Not so much. And I felt so bad for D-backs fans, especially when I looked at my phone on, was it Friday night? No, it was the Spencer Strider start where he got lit up. When it was Spencer Strider versus Tommy Henry.
Yeah.
And looking at that just objectively, that's just an unfair matchup for Tommy Henry.
And, sure, yeah.
And Tommy Henry heard all of our slander and said, fuck all of y'all. This is what I can do. And he went out there and admittedly he shoved. And then I looked at the score and I'm all, I don't understand what's happening. Why Spencer Strider is imploding. What is going on? And then now obviously it comes out that he's hurt, but I was just in shambles. I was like, this is not, oh, what? And then to go into extra innings and to lose how they did because Geraldo Perdomo was hurt and Blaze Alexander, who we've been giving a lot of shine to on the pod, being the new exciting rookie, was in, made a couple of defensive errors and just basically gave up that game. And it was just not, it was not a good look. And then to lose it again after being staked a huge lead, literally they put 6 runs on Max Fried in the first inning on Max Fried. You're all, I'm sorry, wait, what? And then for the Braves to climb out of that, good on you, Braves. I don't want to give you any shine either, Braves, but I will because you're that good. But the D-backs fans are just shambles because they're like, it was so close, it was right there. Sorry, D-Bucks fans. You got just the tip and nothing else.
Well, the most interesting thing is that I guess it's just way more common to see hitters make adjustments. So the second or third time through the lineup to see them get to a pitcher, especially of the caliber of Max Fried. But to an extent, it almost speaks to how good the Braves pitching staff or any pitching staff is that can come in and shut shit down after being lit up like that. So it's just not as common that you see the pitchers or the pitching staff as a whole kind of making the adjustments. Yeah. And we expect to see the hitters pick up on things as they get further into the game. And yeah, that was just the opposite of what happened in a number of games for the D-backs so far.
Yeah. And again, shout out to the Braves, because I know when, at least when the Astros, when the other team scores first and scores big, it's almost like the guys kind of lose focus and is like, all right, there's no way that we're going to come back. There's just, it's too big of a deficit. Am I on the field? No. Do I know this for a fact? No. But that's the vibe it gives.
The vibes. Yeah.
For the Braves said, fuck y'all. We're the motherfucking Braves. Oh, you think six? Nah, we got this. And then just slowly but surely, they just chip away and they get the big hits when they need. And then it just so slowly goes the Braves way. And you're all, wait, the last time I looked at the score, it was very lopsided in the D-backs' favor. And now the Braves won? Wait, what? And
yeah, there was one of the days, I can't remember which day it was. It must have been Friday because I was at, Thursday and Friday. It was one of the days I was at another baseball game and I was like checking the scores. And I did. I was like, is this the same game or was that yesterday? Like it very much was the same game. It just seemed so, out of the realm of possibility that it would have gone that way.
Yeah. And shout out D-backs fans. I feel the pain. Not as deeply and as fully as you do, but I do feel your pains. And I guess that's a good segue into all of the pitcher injuries, because after Strider gets lit up, the news comes out that he has some elbow pain and now is apparently getting a second opinion with a doctor in Dallas or Fort Worth, the Meister, Keith Meister, I think is his name, the UCL guy. Everybody goes to him for the Tommy John. And it's apparently looking like he's going to do the internal brace system as opposed to Tommy John. There's not the official announcement yet, but that's what's come out. So he went down, and then Shane Bieber for the Guardians, who has just been absolutely lights out. And I had him on my fantasy team and I dropped him for Jared Jones. And the guys in my league were like, Susie, what the fuck are you doing? And I said, I don't want to be right about it, but he has a history of being hurt. And I don't know if he's going to stay healthy. I'm obviously not wishing injury on anybody, but I don't know if he's going to stay as good as he is. And I picked up Jared Jones. Somebody else picked Shane Bieber up, and then Shane Bieber shoved, and they were like, I'm all that. I get it. I totally understand. And then he goes down with this news and I'm all, oh my God, I didn't want to be right. I didn't want to be right like this.
Yeah.
So Shane Bieber is now out, and what is that going to do for his free agency? That's just a kick to the freaking teeth.
Truly. Obviously for the Guardians, but even more so just for him as a player. And it sucks because there's so much speculation, like wildfire, around why this is happening. And we can obviously talk about that and our thoughts on that. But that you bring up such a good point in that a lot of the times the timing of when these injuries are happening for these guys is right in like the year that they're coming into free agency or the years leading up to it. And that is as much of a problem of why we have to figure out what's going on as anything, because with the way that it's currently set up, like Steven Strasburg has fortunately reached an agreement with the Nationals to let him leave baseball, but he's a perfect example of someone who his life is forever changed and he will live with chronic pain and limitations forever. Unfortunately, he got his bag, but there's just as many guys who are going to have the same issues that don't. And that is a very real part of this epidemic of pitcher injuries. And I think it is primarily because of how they are being utilized, the increase in velocity and the spin rates and all of that from such a young age, because I had a conversation with Nick who runs Pitcher List, and he was telling me how it's a lot easier for scouts to find value and recognize obviously velocity than it is command. And there's also, I think, just less, or there's more consistency with velocity. If you find a guy who can throw that hard, especially at a young age, you're like, it's, we can only work on that from here as you get bigger and stronger. But the command is not as a consistent thing. It's why pitchers like even Adam Wainwright and Kyle Gibson are not as highly regarded in the game right now.
Right.
Because they aren't guys who throw super hard. And yeah, every few starts, they're pretty much guaranteed to not have a quality start. That's, it's not as consistent as maybe the velocity is, but it's a big problem. And it is going to change the way that we can enjoy the game as fans too, if all these guys keep getting hurt.
Yeah. Shane Bieber's out. Like I said, Yuri Perez for the Miami Marlins also out. Super awesome young pitcher. And they're just dropping like flies down in Miami. I don't even recognize the names on the list of pitchers down there besides Jesus Luzardo. And I want to say he's 24 and he's the quote unquote ace of their staff. Yeah. And Garrett Cole went down with a elbow injury and he's going to be out until June, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Yankees fans, just hear me when I say this. I truly wanted you guys to have a spectacular year, especially since you had Juan Soto. Garrett Cole was going to be there. Rodon was apparently going to be back. Baseball is just more fun, right? When the Yankees are good and they can talk all their shit and they can back it up. But really and truly, if Cole is hurt and he needs surgery, the longer you're putting it off to take advantage of the year that you have Juan Soto, why? Let the man go get TJ, start the rehab now, and then offer Juan Soto all the bag, all of the money. Because as much as I fucking can't stand Juan Soto, the motherfucker, he belongs in fucking pinstripes. I have not seen a motherfucker that was made more for that stage than Juan Soto. Offer that man whatever the fuck he wants, all of the fucking money, okay? And then when Garrett Cole is healthy, you got it. You got the rotation. Because at this point in time, you're just prolonging the inevitable, I feel like, with Garrett Cole. He's going to try and work through this for how many starts? Five, maybe? And then he's going to go down in August? Like, right before you do any playoff run, if you can get... And then Jonathan Loaisiga, one of their lockdown closers, just went on the 60-day IL for Tommy John. And again, I don't want to wish injury on anybody, but I'm all... You couldn't have done this before the Astro series, Jonathan Loaisiga. What the fuck are we doing here? You had to carve us up. Cool. That was your piece de resistance. See you, motherfuckers. That's what I'm going to peace out with. Just carving up the Astros.
What's cool about baseball is those four games at the beginning of the season and the ones that he did really get to contribute to, especially in a division like the AL East, is it could very much come down to that. And he could have been just as impactful as they needed him to be when it comes to getting in the playoffs. And so that's cool. And that's something to love about baseball. But to your point with Garrett Cole, I totally agree. Obviously, we're speculating to a certain extent, but that's got to be so hard on the players to just know that you have to have your best interest in your long-term health and goals and security in mind because the team has their own agenda. And that's just the reality of the situation. All you can hope is that everyone will be as honest and forthcoming about it and work together to make the decision that works for both parties.
Absolutely. So I was looking at something when everyone's like, oh, it's the pitch clock. It's the pitch clock. I honestly think the pitch clock may be a side effect of this whole pandemic of arm injuries. But really and truly, I think the sticky stuff crackdown a couple of years back really contributed to this. All of the pitchers having to grip their balls harder.
I'm sorry. I got to read you some quotes that I took from this video from Tyler Glasnow's rant. I didn't think it was much of a rant. He did a very nice job articulating this, actually. But he spoke about how, cracking down on the sticky stuff. He said he used sunscreen and rosin. And he never used like spider tack or anything like that. But again, that's like something that's a big no-no now. And he's obviously someone, in terms of his stuff, has been able to find the same level of success without it. And Garrett Cole is another great example. But he said, quote, choking the shit out of all my pitches and, quote, have to hold the ball deep in my hand. And those were just things that because of you, I had to rewatch it and take it in because I was so distracted. And I just thought this is Susie's kind of commentary. Like this is all she heard the first time she watched this video. Absolutely. So thank you for ruining me.
You're welcome. Just know that I didn't take you far off the path, Kelsey. It wasn't like I led you astray. You were there. You just veered, right? Yeah. in that same interview, he goes on to say that he didn't use stuff for a start with the Nationals, and he woke up the next day and he was sore in places that he didn't know that he had muscles, right?
That was so interesting.
So between the sticky stuff and the pandemic, essentially, of getting these kids to throw harder, younger, and essentially playing baseball year round.
Mm-hmm.
I think the days of the three sport athlete are gone. Really and truly, I have down here in Podunk, Texas, it is a baseball town, right? Mm. These kids are playing baseball, I kid you not, all week. And they're doing out of town tournaments all weekend, year round. And then they're playing at school. So there is none of this. They're playing basketball and football or soccer. They're not doing any. They are solely doing baseball year round. So for these pitchers that are literally pitching all of the days, there's a kid down here that I think he's 15 or 16. They've clocked him going like 90, 92.
That's wild. See, and at that age, at that point in development, again, I'm not a doctor. I don't specialize in developmental athletics from kids to adults. I do know a lot about functional movement in adults more specifically, but it's like common sense to assume that doing that so early on, that is not something that used to be the primary focus of getting kids recognized. And you make such a great point about, I guess I didn't realize that the three sport athlete thing was not up with the times, because if you listen to these guys like Eric Kratz and AJ Pruszynski and Todd Frazier on Foul Territory, and they all have kids who are getting into their teenage years and playing baseball and playing other sports too, and like how important that is. And even now we see most of the best well-rounded athletes who are drafted in the major leagues were at least two sport athletes into high school, and some of them even into college.
Yeah.
So that's weird. And I don't know if it's my generation, like millennial parents, that need to simmer down and not, it all plays into all of this of we're trying to get kids to not
the ultimate goal is to be in the MLB. Yeah. And how are you getting recognized? You're not going to get recognized dotting up corners. You're going to get recognized by hitting the velocity, right? And so this problem is not, unfortunately, going to change unless the root of the problem changes, which is the velocity. And that's, unfortunately, I don't think that's going to change. And I don't know how to fix the issue, essentially. There really is nothing to fix besides maybe fixing the baseball and making that a little bit more consistent and apparently not like a cue ball. I had a thought, though, on pitching, because this really played into Ronel Blanco and his no-hitter and his 44 innings of no-hit ball and hit kind of his story and how late he turned into a pitcher and how late we signed him. And my question was, I wonder what the rate of TJ is between Latin versus non-Latin guys. If that rate is higher, lower, same, whatever. And so I Googled how many Latin pitchers have Tommy John. And I don't know who this individual is, but this individual made a Google Doc of legitimately every single pitcher of when they got Tommy John, their nationality, where they went to college, if they went to college, their everything, dates of their surgeries, all of the things. So I will link that in the show notes so you guys can look at it as well. But there was a really interesting thought that I had in my head of looking at the various teams and how many guys have had TJ and if the majority of those guys were American versus the teams that had the least amount of guys that had TJ and what the breakdown was there. So do you know which teams have the lowest amount of pitchers that have had TJ, Kels?
I have to assume it's teams like the Cardinals who still roll out their pitched contact guys, but otherwise I would have no idea.
I think they're lower on the list. There's three teams that are all tied with six guys that have had Tommy John: Houston Astros, the Kansas City Royals and the Philadelphia Phillies.
Interesting.
So now I was thinking, and I only know this information obviously for the Astros pitchers. I don't know this for the other guys, but here's the list of guys from the Kansas City Royals who have had Tommy John: Scott Barlow, Taylor Clark, Brooks Kreske, Cole Reagans, Jonathan Bowlin, Chris Bubich. Don't know about you, but most of those names sound American to me.
Yep.
For Phillies, we have Matt Strom, Jeff Hoffman, Zach Wheeler, Andrew Bellotti, Taijuan Walker, Sir Anthony Dominguez. The majority of those, American guys. For Houston, J.P. France, Jose Urquidy, Rafael Montero Jr., Kendall Graveman, Justin Verlander, Luis Garcia. I know Jose Urquidy did the moved away from his family at 13, 14 and went to a baseball academy. So he's been doing the pitching thing for a lot longer.
Yeah.
I don't know Rafael Montero Jr.'s story on that, but also Luis Garcia, I want to say that they signed later in the Dominican and most of the Dominican guys get signed at like 14, 15. I think he got signed at 19.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And way later, Ronel Blanco got signed, I think, when he was 20.
Yeah. Or no, 22. Sorry. 22. 22,
yeah. And he was an infielder before he was a pitcher.
Oh, okay.
And so this is my deep dive thought of, is TJ Epidemic an American kind of thing? Because a lot of the Americans are playing ball at younger ages, throwing the ball harder, doing that. Because a lot of the Latin guys have got to do other things to literally be able to live. They can't do the baseball thing all of the time. So that's going to be my deep dive for next show. Probably not the next show. There's a lot of names to go through. But I'm going to go through and see the ratio of Latin to American guys to see what that is. Do you know what team has the most Tommy John?
Honestly, I would guess the Dodgers, but that's just because of their willingness to invest in the rehab of pitchers as well. And I think their confidence in their staff with that. Is that correct?
It is correct. So the Dodgers have 15.
Wow.
15. And Cincinnati and New York Yankees have 14. So they're tied for second. But let me read you off the list of Dodgers pitchers who have TJ: Daniel Hudson, Justin Brulio, Ryan Brazier, Bruce Stargardt, Lance Lynn, Andre Jackson. Apparently this was 2023. Sorry. Nick Robertson, Victor Gonzalez, Michael Grove, Shelby Miller, Gus Varland, Noah Syndergaard, Caleb Ferguson, Dustin May, Tony Gonsolin. Pitchers on the IL: Alex Reyes, Jimmy Nelson, and Walker Buehler. All of those guys had TJ.
Yeah, and they certainly have just as many names as aren't on the team anymore. They now have Shohei Ohtani and others. Yeah. So
this, I'm gonna link. This is a free Google Doc. I don't know who made this Google Doc, but they have spent a ton of time putting this information together, and I am thrilled that I found it. I'm actually going to reach out to them and see if I can't maybe get on the thing to be able to sort via Americans versus Latin guys to see what the ratio is. But that's my theory, is that the TJ is more prevalent in the United States pitchers versus the Latin pitchers.
I certainly think you're on to something, Susie. And I don't know, again, this is a high level generalization that's maybe not fair to make, but about our culture in America in general, is that even the like businessmen and who are the most successful, we're all just like, go at no expense. And we also have more that make it big and fail, I think, across the board in all situations, whether it be business, sports, et cetera. So that I hate to say it sounds like the American way to me a little bit, but that's where I could totally see that you're onto something.
Yeah. So I'm going to dig deep in and see if that theory holds or whatnot. It's going to take a while, guys. Listeners, if you hear this version of this anywhere else, please let me know, because I would love to collaborate. Obviously, this cannot be an original thought. Like I think I had an original thought, but I'm sure that somewhere someone has said, I wonder. I don't know if they have a platform, but if they do, if you hear about this anywhere else, please let me know so that we can collaborate, because obviously two heads better than one. That's what she said. So that we can divvy up the work and figure it out. But that's, yeah, that was my little thing on that. And especially coming off of Ronel Blanco's no hitter and then what he did last night, and just Adolis Garcia, what the actual fuck? The ball that you hit wasn't even in the fucking zone. You couldn't have just waited for a fucking pitch to get out. No, cool. Love that for you and your steroided ass. Anyways, listen, I'm a bump on the log and I don't exercise. I did not think that there was a way as a fully grown human being to make your head larger. So I would just like the head routine. Drop what you're doing. Are you like banging cans on your head, Adolis Garcia? How smash is your head literally larger? That's all I want to know. That's all I would like to know. Drop the workout routine.
Maybe he's just like eating 3 cheeseburgers and having 12 beers for dinner. Apparently Luis Robert should be doing.
You can't pull fat, Kelsey, duh.
That's what I heard. Susie shared this with me, and I've actually had a number of people share this with me because of my background in nutrition and fitness, surely. But Azegian, oh, we love his takes. We love to hear it. He was on talking about Luis Robert's supposed healthy diet, which, like, I know nothing, no particulars about Luis Robert's diet, so we're not here to really talk about that or argue that. But according to Azegian, if Luis Robert just wasn't so into being healthy, he might stay healthy more easily. I'm trying to find the exact quote here because it was great. Yeah. Okay. Azegian says, like John Kruk always said, fat never pulls. You can't pull fat. Eat right. Be careful what you eat. Nah, man. I remember guys having 6, 7, 12 Budweisers and 3 hamburgers going and getting it, man. And they played all year long. So my initial take, I'm going to quote somebody else here because I just feel like our friend of the show, Emily Nyman of Breaking Balls, had a response to this tweet that was, first of all, my initial thought. And she said, does he not know how or why things change? Competition forces evolution of processes. It's almost as if players don't eat like that anymore because they wouldn't be able to keep up with a field of competitors whose eating and drinking habits don't resemble that of an obese alcoholic. So I thought that was a very good point. Susie, what was your initial thought when you heard this take from Azegian?
He's right. I've never pulled a fucking muscle before and I eat like shit all the fucking time. No, I'm just kidding. I feel horrible after I ingest the most delicious, greasy, fried things. Like, it tastes so good. And then afterwards, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I want to.
Yeah, you like have to take a nap.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know that your body cannot do all of those things and then perform at the level that you need to in this day and age.
Here's the thing. I always like to see both sides of everything. That is one of my, I like to think a personal strength of mine. So I actually, after I totally agreed with Emily, I then took a step back. And as I was telling my husband about it, this conversation came into play of a lot of people don't look at food and like caloric intake as recovery, but it very much is, especially like the balance of macros and getting the right macro micronutrients. And I know from just from conversations that I've had with minor league players that they don't have a lot of education around nutrition
right.
and recovery in their developmental years. And they don't really have a lot of resources for that. So a lot of times Tyler O'Neill is somebody we talk about being injured and frustrations. And he is openly, I don't think he's vegan. I think he's vegetarian, but he might even be vegan. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I thought over the past couple of years of knowing that as just part of his issue too. So I'm not saying Azegian's like, over on this side.
Right.
And maybe Tyler O'Neill has been on the other end of the healthy right. spectrum. It's all about balance at yeah. the end of the day. I'm not saying like having 2 cheeseburgers and a beer after a long week before a day off is going to hurt your game. I right. think that actually with the amount of calories that these guys need to be taking in to recover. And again, as long as the balance of the macros is really the more important part. But this was like such an extreme take that I think I like to think maybe give Azegian a little credit here. Maybe this was his point and he right. just took it to the extreme to where now we're all laughing about it.
I don't know. Good on you, Azegian. Let's fire the nutritionist for the White Sox and just put Ozzy Guillen in charge of their diet and see how well it works out. Because I don't think it could get worse, apparently. Who knows?
Whoever he was talking with, and forgive me because I don't know the name of whoever was on this post game with him, but he was like, as Ozzy Guillen was saying this, he was like thinking he was saying the opposite. And you could tell he was like not on the same page. And then he was like, oh, wait, you just know. Okay. I don't know.
Again, you refer to as balance. That's the key in all, pretty much in everything in life. Okay. Everything.
We're here to tell you.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
You're welcome for that nugget of information. If you didn't know, that is the key to life. Now you do. Pay us for that. Thank you. I also would just to know, though, when we're talking about balance, when the people who designed the Phillies City Connect jersey, what type of balance do they currently possess?
I was looking forward to talking about this because I initially was so disappointed and just thought that they were so stupid. And again, I was like, who is designing these City Connect jerseys? But after second look, and then I saw the hat and the patch on the side, I'm like, I'm very into it now, actually.
I am 1,000% out. 1,000 fucking percent out. What are you doing, Philly?
The Liberty Bell is cool.
The what?
The Liberty Bell.
Okay, the Liberty Bell is cool. I'll give you that. The Liberty Bell is cool. What are your colors? What the fuck are you doing?
I think that it's different than the normal colors, though.
Are you the Mariners? Absolutely not. No, nobody on God's green earth is going to look at that and say, that's the Phillies, except for reading whatever the god-awful font is. No. Fuck, no. Absolutely not.
You know what? I think when I decided to like them, the number one factor that helped me decide to like them was that my husband looks really good in that color. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to get him one of those. Okay, he looks great in that jersey. So it's probably, that's where my bias is probably coming from. But I do like the Liberty Bell hat. That was the thing that really pulled me in.
I liked the Liberty Bell on the hat. There we go. I liked that. That was fine. I liked the patch. I understood the patch. The skyline on the inside of the fucking collar. What are you doing? Why? If you're going to do that, put it on the fucking outside of the collar so that you fucking see it. Okay. Yeah. And the fact that it was a blue, like it's blue collar and it's a nod to your work class.
Yeah, but that's a little high fashion thing to do, to put something like on the insides.
So yeah, that you can be like, hey, look at the inside of my collar. Look at how cool. What? Yeah. Stop it. That reminds me of what the Orioles did for their City Connect when they did it on like the inside.
Yeah.
And then everyone was all, if you're trying to draw awareness to it, why the fuck is it on the inside? Mm-hmm. And then they were like, oh, just kidding. And so then they redid it and they flipped it up or something. I don't remember. But now you can see it visibly on. But I like the storyline of that. I did not like the placement of that at all. And I think what I was just so sad about was the fact that I love the powder blue Philly uniforms.
Yes, I do too. I think they might be my favorite uniform in baseball.
I think so. I think that is why my disappointment is so much more bitter than I had expected, because for some reason I was expecting the City Connect uniforms to be more along the lines of an actually Philly uniform versus some god awful thing. I don't even know. And I don't know why I expected that. Looking at all of the other City Connects that have been out there, they're out there. There are versions of them that I'm all, but I all the way out on the Philly City Connect, all the way out. I really don't even really like this, the Astros City Connect jersey. Yeah. So it's not even like a Philly thing. I just really don't. And I hate the fucking font. What is that font?
Yeah, I was not a huge fan of the font. And I think that was initially the thing that for me, that was like, are you kidding me? But the point, it's very valid that they do have one of the best uniforms in baseball. And that blue one is definitely my favorite. But even their pinstripe uniforms and stuff, like, they just have a really good uniform, a very iconic uniform. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals are going to get their City Connect this year too, I believe. And that's something that I think I'm trying to stay in a positive headspace about it overall, because I can only imagine what those are going to look like. But yeah, it's almost like they're trying too hard overall, would be my take on City Connects as a whole.
Yeah, I don't know. And the ombre effect of it, because at first I literally tweeted it. Is it the lighting that's making it look darker on the bottom and lighter on the top? Or Is it ombre? Is it supposed to be that way? If I have to question it, you did it too subtly. You got to make it look like that's what we meant to do and not like a photography mistake. And maybe that's just me having the photography eye. And
no, being that's like, a very good point.
What's happening there? Is it supposed to be?
You never want anyone to look at anything like aesthetically and be like, is that supposed to be that way? So that's a very good point.
I don't know. I'm all the way out on it. And the fact that they're retiring the Nats Cherry Blossom City Connect.
They are?
I loved that one. I thought that one was awesome. Mm-hmm. And that one got so much hate. I'm like, why? I don't even understand. Like, it's fucking iconic and it has to do with a fucking city. It makes sense. You look at the jersey and you say, oh, it's the Nats. Yep. You immediately know what team that goes for. If you took the Philly off of the nameplate of that jersey.
Yeah.
Like I said, you're the goddamn Mariners. I would have thought that you're the Mariners. Maybe the Marlins, but definitely not Philly at all in the league.
Right.
I don't like that at all. No, thank you. I don't know. I was very shocked and dismayed, like the fan that caught the Shohei Ohtani home run ball. And the way that this all has been handled, I am still shocked and dismayed at. And I don't know how in the fuck the woman's husband did not throw a fucking fit. Because I know that if Mike was with me and we were someplace and they tried to separate us, he's going to go down swinging. He's going to get himself thrown in fucking jail. And I'm going to have to go bail him out. But there's no way that they would have been able to separate us. First off, I would have said shit as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that the Dodgers security people swarmed her and then separated them just absolutely fucking blows my mind. If you guys don't know what we're talking about here, let's give some context.
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani hit his first home run, obviously in Dodger Stadium. This nice girl named, I think, Amber. All I really remember apparently is her Twitter name, which is Sugar Tits. And that's not, I don't want to refer to her as Sugar Tits for the rest of the time. So
amazing. I hadn't found her on Twitter yet.
So I'm going to go with Amber.
I think it is Amber.
And her husband, I think, is Alexis, I want to say. And so apparently there was a scuffle for the ball and the ball rolled and it literally was like at her feet. She picks this up. She's elated that this is the Shohei Ohtani home run ball. And immediately fans around her are telling her, girl, do not undersell this ball. Do not undersell. Like, you go get your bag. Go get bank for this ball. Because they know. Everybody fucking knows. It's Shohei Ohtani's fucking home run ball from the Dodgers. It's going to be worth something. Afterwards, it came out that apparently there was some miscommunication that Shohei said that he met the fans and interacted with them. And then the fan came out and said, no, we didn't even get to talk to Shohei Ohtani. And so that whole cloud is coming back. But when the security took them back, separated her from her husband, I can understand if she came with a group of people and they separated her from the group of people. Got that. Okay. But her husband, absolutely not. What are you doing there? And then refused to authenticate the ball. If she decided not to give them the ball, they said, that's fine. We're just not going to authenticate it. The fuck? Now, I was listening to a couple of their podcasts, and apparently the authenticator does not work for the team. All the authenticators that are there at all of the stadiums do not work for that specific team. They work for Major League Baseball overall. They do not work for the team. Okay. So the fact that the Dodgers security is saying that they're not going to authenticate the ball. No, absolutely not. That is not a thing that you needed to do. And then they offered her a cap, I think, a cap and a bat or something. And she's like, is that all? So they ended up giving her like a bat, a cap, and a glove, I think. Nope, not even a jersey. She didn't even get to meet Shohei Ohtani. Jung-Hoo Lee, did you see that whole interaction? Jung-Hoo Lee's first home run?
No.
It was a family, and apparently they are Padres fans. They're big Ha-Seong Kim fans. So they gave up the ball. They're like, well, they got to meet him, did some super cute pictures, got the whole video interaction. I want to say got like a press pass and they got to meet him. They got to do other things with him. I think the next game is on them. That's how you treat the fucking fans, people. That is how you don't fucking separate them from their family and then lowball them and then threaten to not authenticate the ball. What are you doing, Dodgers? And now, because it's blown up this way and it's gone into the media, now they're like, oh, we're sorry. Now the Dodgers want to do fucking shit.
Yeah. They're trying to invite him back. Yeah. Okay. So the first thing that stood out to me was just the fact that it was so clear that an organization like the Dodgers, who have like currently numerous of the best players in all of baseball that are going to have these historic moments and have had many over the years, like, how do they not have very clear process and procedure in place, especially on days when they know shit like this is going to happen? So it was just such a bad look because it was very clear that they were not prepared and they didn't have a good SOP to follow. And then, yeah, secondly, it's easy to do a quick meet and greet, a quick arm around, snap a pic, like literally less than 2 minutes of the player's life, who you got to assume would be happy to do it. We don't know if Shohei Ohtani didn't want to meet them or, but there, you've got that whole rabbit hole that we can go down pretty easily now of Ohtani said he met them. He definitely didn't. And if he can lie about that, who's to say he's not lying about other things that have been very prevalent in the news recently surrounding him and questionable activity? So that was just like, oh man, a true PR nightmare. I don't know, if you were Amber and you got invited back, would you go, or what would you do now?
I would be so pissed. And that was another thing that she was saying. She was saying that her and her husband, they are lifelong Dodgers fans. They have been Dodgers fans literally all her life. And she used the word loving environment. She's a Dodgers fan. Obviously, you're going to have a loving environment. I've heard some horror stories, though. I don't think that I would be very comfortable, A, going back into the stadium, because just as in a safety issue.
Yeah.
From the reports that were out, they said that they literally swarmed her, surrounded her.
I believe it.
I'm 5'2". I don't know how tall this woman is. It's not going to take very many people to surround me. And just from a safety and security vantage point, I would feel unsafe.
Absolutely.
I would definitely feel unsafe.
It would be like traumatizing. Honestly, yeah. It would be really scary.
So the fact that the Dodgers are now coming back and being like, oh, we're sorry. Do you want to do? Would you have done this if it didn't get blown up in the media? Absolutely not. You would not. You would just be on your merry way. And the whole thing of his home run ball, apparently reports were saying that it was supposed to go for $100,000, like, if she were to try and sell it. But again, there's no way that she can sell it without it getting authenticated.
Mm-hmm.
That was the most flabbergasting thing about this whole thing, was that they said that they would have refused to authenticate it.
As if it sounds like it's not even really their choice to make, because it's someone who works for the league that is there to do that in any case. And if anything, it's really unfortunate that it's just another example of how out of touch these organizations are with the fans and the reality of what $100,000 means to most people in this country.
Exactly. They could have deferred 3/4 of that.
She probably could have given that. Absolutely.
Right? They could have given her like $25,000 right now and then said, you know what, for the next 20 years or so, we'll just give you, I can't do the math. I don't know what that will equal, but you know what I'm saying, people. Okay. The whole thing was just poorly, very poorly just handled.
Yeah.
And it makes me so angry. So angry about it. And just, I can't even believe it. But another thing that got me super angry when I read it and then tagged you in, Kelsey, was the fact that the Miami Marlins, literally after coming off of a improbable going to the playoffs, negates Skip Schumacher's managerial contract.
2023 NL Manager of the Year, very well-deserved, Skip Schumacher. Part of me saw it coming that they weren't going to invest in him long-term because clearly they don't care about keeping the right people around. They had Kim Ng, who was a huge part of doing anything to get that organization on anyone's radar for the past few years, who they clearly didn't see the value in. And I think I've said this on episodes before, but I have heard and read from very valid sources from The Athletic that the owner of the Marlins, Bruce Sherman, employees of his have gone on the record saying things like, he clearly cares more about yachts and his money than this team or any of his employees. And that's the culture, unfortunately. No matter how many people you bring in of Kim Ng and Skip Schumacher's caliber, if that's at the top, man, it's really unfortunate because they have so many fun players on that team. And even though, yeah, they have a lot of injuries and they didn't do what needed to be done to set Skip up for success in the offseason, they still have, they would have, I really believe that they would have a much more interactive fan base. And the fans that they do have are great. And the facilities that they have are beautiful. And yeah, it's just, it's so frustrating to see. And the Marlins played the Cardinals in their home opener that I was at this past week. And Skip Schumacher, former St. Louis Cardinal, he was the bench coach for the Cardinals before he was the manager of the Marlins. He got the largest ovation, I kid you not, of anyone at opening day on either team.
Oh my gosh,
that's Schumacher awesome. Got the biggest ovation from the Cardinals fans. And I'm not worried about him. In fact, this is, it's better for him, just like it's better for Kim Ng, that they're going to get to go to organizations that can value them and what they bring to the table more. But what the hell? It's the first week of the season. Why do they feel the need to put this in motion and knowing that it would come out and be a storyline when they haven't yet won a game? They did yesterday. Yeah. But they're a week in and they're like, Skip, it's clearly your fault. What message are they trying to send?
Yeah. It's not the fact that we don't have a starting fucking rotation.
Yeah.
Okay. Or the fact that the only player you signed in the offseason was Tim fucking Anderson.
I was cheering for our guy, Tim Anderson. I said, revenge season starts Monday, Tim.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Have at it.
And Luis Arraez has not been off to the start that he obviously has been used to or wants. And so it's just a malady of errors over there. And I felt so bad for Skip. I'm all, how then are you invested in the season? I don't assume that Skip is the kind of guy to say, all right, I don't have a job after this, so I may as well fuck around. I don't think that's in his wheelhouse. He's going to manage this team as if he was be the manager next year as well. But just in that thought alone, Peter Bendix came over from the Rays. And I think at this point, they didn't hire him. Skip Schumacher was a Kim Ng hire. Mm-hmm. And definitely. I think maybe they're not.
Yeah.
That Skip Schumacher is not fitting into the plan. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And being a former player, I think maybe the Marlins are wanting to run that team from the front office versus in the dugout and are wanting, I don't want to say a yes man, but essentially that's what it's going to be. I'm thinking that it is going to be some sort of person that does not have any sort of front office, general manager, any sort of experience there so that they can essentially lord over that person and say, this is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. This is what you're going to do. It makes me sad because Miami Marlins fans are fun. That place is fun. You have Jazz Chisholm. He was just on the fucking cover of the video game of MLB The Show. Like, why are you not promoting that? That makes no absolute sense to me.
Yeah, whatsoever. Even without their willingness to spend, they have put a lot of exciting players together and the vibes are there, but they're just like trying to set it all on fire. I don't know why, it's definitely, it's definitely about money. And Gabe Kapler's over there too, as the GM.
I'm wondering though, since he brought over Peter Bendix from the Rays, if they're not just saying, you know what, we're just going to burn it all down. We're going to burn it all down and we're going to start from the studs. And it's essentially, it's going to be like Rays 2.0 is what
a lot of teams would ideally be doing right now. Right. And it's a shame because they do have more pieces than not, I think, where that doesn't need to happen. And there will be players who do get stuck on that roster that suffer from it. And that blows. But Skip Schumacher also, he's been in and around the game long enough to know that this is also just part of being a manager. So I think you're dead on. He's not going to let it affect him and his performance and his relationship with his players, especially this season. And I'm already excited to see where he goes next.
Yeah. So on that note of managers that don't have any managerial experience, let's move over to the Red Sox. And do we owe the Red Sox an apology, Kels?
Too soon to say, Susie. I have been happy to see Red Sox fans in my feed, not just absolutely despondent and down in the dumps. and out of it this early in the season.
Obviously, all of us had the New York Yankees at the top of that division and the Boston Red Sox second. So that's what we had. That's what we drew up in the offseason, right? That the Yankees would be 8-2 and that the
that those were our predictions, I'm pretty sure.
For sure. Not that the Red Sox would be 7-3. I'm sorry, Bo Sox fans. I apologize.
I think they were right there with you. I don't think you need to apologize. Like, they were more down on out on that team than anyone. But again, the good thing is, and Red Sox fans, coming from a fan who had to find things to stay invested for pretty much the entirety of last season, because by the second week of April in 2023, the Cardinals were out of it and they were playing like they were out of it. I think they have enough to be excited about regardless of what way this goes long term. And they've got Tyler O'Neill, who's the home run leader, along with Mookie Betts in Major League Baseball. I think he has the highest OPS in baseball by a pretty substantial margin right now. And if nothing else, we're going to see a lot of bro bombs on Netflix.
Yeah, both of them are tied with 5 home runs each, Mookie Betts and Tyler O'Neill. And Tyler O'Neill leads the league in slug with an .893 slug. And Mookie Betts is right there behind him at .841.
See, Red Sox fans, you don't need Mookie Betts. You have Tyler O'Neill.
Yeah, that's – and
– I am kind of surprised that Tyler O'Neill is not hitting earlier in their lineup.
I think
he's a great leadoff hitter for them the way that Mookie Betts is.
I think after – especially after this last series, I think the order will be shaken up. Look at you, Red Sox and Tyler O'Neill, with your 1407 OPS all by your lonesome at number one, with Mookie Betts trailing you at 1359. Side note, Spencer Steer, if you guys are playing fantasy baseball and you don't have Spencer Steer on your roster, what the fuck are you doing?
Do what you need to do. Get him.
Okay. Go get Spencer Steer if he's not on your roster, because that motherfucker has a 13-13 OPS, which is third in the league. And when I said slug, guess who's third in slug as well? Spencer motherfucking Steer.
I believe it.
Yep. And let's see. So home runs. Let's see how many home runs Spencer Steer has. Spencer Steer does not. Look at that. Spencer Steer has 3 home runs. So lots of people in the league have 3 home runs. Lots of people have 4 home runs. Adolis Garcia, Teoscar Hernandez, Marcelo Ozuna, Mike Trout all have 4 home runs. Altuve, Alvarez, that's Yordan Alvarez, not Francisco. Yordan Alvarez, Michael Conforto, Michael Garcia. Don't sleep on Michael Garcia, y'all, for the Royals.
Mm-hmm.
Riley Green, I almost said Yuli Gurriel. Lourdes Gurriel, Bryce Harper, Ketel Marte, MJ Melendez, Matt Olson, Isak Paredes, Giancarlo Stanton. Did he get all of those in one game?
I don't care.
Spencer Steer, Fernando Tatis Jr., Christian Walker. Oh, look at you, Taylor Ward, with 3 home runs. And Christian Yelich. Okay. All of those guys have 3 home runs. So good on you. Some names in there that I wasn't expecting to see. Michael Garcia. And, like, hooray for you. You want to talk about RBIs? When I say go get Spencer Steer, go get Spencer Steer. He is tied for second in RBIs. You won't even guess who he's tied with. With 12, by the way. That number is 12 that these people are.
I don't know.
Jake Berger from the Miami Marlins.
Oh, yeah. He has like half of them against the Cardinals, but I'm still hype. He has like half of them against Lance Lynn, actually.
And yeah. Seiya Suzuki.
Okay, yeah, Seiya is off to a start, man. Yeah.
So Seiya Suzuki, Spencer Steer, and Jake Berger, all with 12 RBIs. And then Teoscar Hernandez leading the league with 14.
Like, yeah.
Good on ya's fucking Mookie Betts. Wow. That's
Spencer Steer has probably had the most like impactful RBIs too, and home runs. Yeah. He's had some big opportune hits.
Yes, he has. I have Spencer Steer. Quick standings update. I know it's early, people.
I don't look at standings until at least mid-June, Susie. So I'm going to just plug my ears.
You just plug your ears. Plug your ears, Kelsey. I'll let you know when you can listen again. Okay. So in the AL West, the Texas Rangers lead with 6-3. The second place, Los Angeles Angels, 5-4. Seattle Mariners, 4-6. And Houston Astros, we are chilling in the cellar with our brethren, the Oakland Athletics, 3-7. Let's go. AL East, the New York Yankees off to a blistering fucking start, 8-2. Boston right behind him, 7-3. The Baltimore Orioles, 5-4. What are you guys doing losing to the Pirates? What's happening there? What is happening, Orioles? Side note, I just thought it was Astros Twitter that is insane. Nope. It's all of the Twitters, all of the Twitter fan bases. It's hysterical. The arguments that Astros Twitter had last season with bringing Yiner up, letting Yiner play more, sit Maldi. The Baltimore Oriole fans are rabid.
Yeah.
They want all of their young kids in. They don't give a fuck about Tony Kemp. And they just, Tony Kemp, Ramon Urias, all of them don't want to go. Tampa Bay, 5-5. Toronto Blue Jays, 4-6. AL Central. Look at you, Cleveland Guardians. We owe you an apology as well because you are off to a blistering start, 7-2. I don't know what you're going to do now that Shane Bieber is gone, though, but that's okay. That is okay.
Stephen Vogt, high on vibes. He's got him there.
I think it's Stephen Vogt willing his team to do well and DFAing Miles Straw. And the Detroit Tigers. Look at you, Detroit Tigers, 6-3. We said Detroit Tigers were going to be a little sneaky, as well as the Kansas City fucking Royals at 6-4, baby. 6-4. Minnesota Twins, Minnesota at 3-4. And the Chicago White Sox all by your lonesome down there. You've won one lonesome game. In the National League, NL East, Atlanta 6-2, Philly 4-5. New York Mets are tied with the Washington Nationals at 3-6. And the Miami Marlins, hooray for you. You have won one game, 1-9. Okay, Pittsburgh. What are you doing, Pittsburgh Pirates? The vibes are high in Pittsburgh. I can't do the raise it. I can't do that. So I'm not going to. But just know that in my heart, I am doing the raise it Jolly Roger fucking chant with y'all, even though you have Aroldis Chapman. And I really don't want to like it.
Yeah.
Good on you, though. Okay. Because you guys are 8-2. The Milwaukee Brewers. Do you know how many people I have on my team from the Milwaukee Brewers? A lot.
I think I have none.
Way more than I thought that I was going to have, but good on me because they got me a lot of points. Milwaukee Brewers, 6-2. Chicago Cubs, 6-3. Cincinnati Reds, 5-4. And your St. Louis Cardinals are 5-5 with a 500 record. Good on you.
500 ball, baby. That's the goal.
That's what I would give anything to be 500. I don't, you know. In the NL West, the Dodgers have an 8-4 record. San Diego 5-7, Arizona 4-6, Giants 4-6, and Colorado Rockies at 2-8. You know, all of the teams down at the bottom that you definitely would have thought at the beginning of the season were going to be there for sure. Astros, I'm looking at you motherfuckers. So with that, we are going to close the show. Kelsey, tell the peoples where they can find you on the interwebs.
Yeah, hit me up on Twitter forever at KBurdTweets, KBURD tweets. I put out weekly episodes of Peace, Love, and Baseball on Tuesdays. I cover the Cardinals on Sunday nights. And then, of course, you can find me here, and all of that is in my link tree if you find me on Twitter.
Definitely. For all of our people that have given us ratings and reviews, we love you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. If not, what the fuck are you doing? Click the red button on YouTube, subscribe, tell all your friends. And if you haven't already given us a rating or review on Apple, Spotify, please do that. It shows that you love us and that you're actually listening. Okay. I don't trust the numbers. I want actual tangible things, people. So with that, we are going to close the show. Spain, we are still rocking Spain, Apple Podcast charts. I don't know what happened to all of the other peoples. Spain loves us though. We're still rocking those charts.
Come on back, everybody.
Come on back, people. All right. Share it with your friends. If you are not using your phone, just put us on silent. Okay. And just run the podcast. That's all I'm saying. If you really loved us, you wouldn't. No, I'm just kidding. But with that, we are going to close the show and say, yay, baseball.